So now we're going to get into the CSM corner, which we've got so much to talk about here. Holy shit. And then we're going to wrap things up with an extremely funny dramatic reading. But first, the CSM corner. The minutes have come out, which is means it's official. CSM9 has the fastest minutes, except for CSM7's minutes, that you've ever done. So congrats.
These are pretty good minutes.
They're excellent. They're not quite as fast as Celine's unofficial minutes for CSM7, but they're pretty good. I'm stealing CSM9's thunder. No, they did great. They have the fastest minutes publication record, like, without a doubt. And major props to CCP Lilu for helping facilitate that.
Yeah, it was I think this minutes process is kind of the evidence that it is partly the CSM and it is also partly CCP that has to get the minutes out there.
Well, there's no doubt about that, I don't think. But now that you've done it, future CSMs are going to pretty much have to do it too, or else it's going to be a big letdown. So it's a big document. We will include the link in the show notes for sure. But as far as like tackling it, I don't even think we could do it section by section. Because there's too much.
Yeah, it's sort of transcript style. It's a slightly different format. Well, the page design is slightly different than it was. It's, you know, pretty clear how it got pulled out of. We had collaborative editing where we could actually directly just there was no sort of awkward emailing of documents this time around. We could edit it. CCP could look over at it, and then they could edit it, and that was great. Flipping through here, I mean I really like the player experience set. I will basically always. I'll basically always talk about, player experience, new player experience, etc. You know, obviously if you're interested in NullSec, we had a lot of conversations about that. And so there's NullSec stuff in the minutes. There's a lot more meat in the minutes. This was one of those things that we, you know, went back and forth with CCP on. And we've... This go round, the minutes are meatier than the CSM 8 minutes, and that's, you know, that's kind of just CCP loosening up and letting a little bit more out than they have in the past. So if one of the things that you liked about minutes was pouring through them and hearing, you know, designers speculating and, you know, getting some idea of what's going on, I think that's also partly a thing with the shorter release cycle. Some of the stuff that we talked about here not only is coming out to, you know, not only is the stuff that we talked about here, you know, coming out to the players, some of it, you know, very shortly after we talked about it, but it is coming out into the game very, very quickly.
Yeah, that really struck me. Like, to read it from the point of view of, like, disclosing upcoming things, it almost reads like if you put it out 6 months after the thing on the old style patch, like just about everything discussed is in, except for some really long range things. That said, there's a lot to pick over here, but I was just very surprised that, you know, you got the minutes out in record time, and yet so much of what's being talked about has really matured, and a lot of it's even just been implemented. And if it hasn't been implemented, it's been announced to be implemented pretty soon, like a week from now.
Yeah.
So, lots of stuff. I wrote down a couple points to talk about. One cool thing, Sugar Kyle. She's so awesome. She's fast becoming one of my favorite CSMs. And she put out a description, an aspirational description of what making money in LoSec should look like. And I felt good enough to repeat it verbatim. Sugar Kyle, my concept is that if you do activities in LoSec over a period of time, you will find enough stuff to earn ISK. If you roam around in Losec finding sites to do, rats to kill, people to hunt, you will make 3 hours worth of ISK in a reasonably comparable fashion to someone in another type of space doing a more static activity due to that space and taking the risk of losing your ship. Yes. I really like the concept of Losec being the mobile area where roaming lives, basically. And a lot of changes to the game have sort of encouraged Losec down that road, and I think they're pretty healthy. And it seems like the Losec reps, Sugar Kyle and Funky Bacon, agree. So if we're all good with that, please, CCP, keep developing Losec in that direction, because it's been hella fun moving back in there. Like, the ghost sites, looking around for Mordus, the tags for Sec, ratting, increased factional warfare, population, all that sort of factoring into making Losec more small-scale, dynamic, roaming around kind of stuff. The changes to gate guns, of course, making it a little bit easier for you to be in smaller ships. All that stuff sort of come together on that.
Yeah, she makes a cool point. Just static versus dynamic. I mean, it is really actually kind of in the end does make you a lot less vulnerable to have to dynamically move place to place to make your income.
I think the one thing that Losec still kind of needs is that feeling of when you're out in 00 hunting plexes, or excuse me, hunting people in anomalies, and you like you scan down that Raven or that Dominix and you warp on top of him, point him in that anomaly, and then bring your fleet in to wreck him. There's no real comparable thing in Losec. There's like the probe down plexes, but that's not really doable in an Inti or anything like that. You need to bring some specialized equipment, and then people just watch for probes, and as soon as they see probes, they're gone. So I don't know how you do that while also maintaining the mobile lifestyle we're talking about for the target's perspective, but that's pretty much all that Losec is missing, and if they put that in there, I don't see any need to roam at the 00 ever again. To be honest with you, Losec has been a lot of fun since we've moved there. Someone wants to talk about modules?
Yeah, one of the things that kind of interests me is the changes they're making to modules by getting rid of the meta, you know, meta 2, meta 3, meta 4s, and rolling everything into tier 1, T1, and then a meta version, and then tier 2. It seems to me a great idea. I thought it was far too bloated as we spoke. It was far too bloated at as it is now with the number of meta modules. It will make fittings more interesting. I don't know if that's good or bad, because there were some pretty interesting fits you could get by moving meta 4 and meta 3 modules around for this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I mean, it was complex. There's always that question with Eve of, you know, are we looking at good complexity or bad complexity here? And I think, you know, I think CCP is striking a decent balance here. They're not just sort of deleting meta levels entirely. They're trying to make them, you know, more complicated. So what we're hopefully going to have after this is a world where it's, you know, you've got maybe only one or two meta levels in an item, but instead of being, you know, well, meta 4 or tech 2, depending on your, you know, your skills, and occasionally depending on your fit, it'll be an actual, you know, which of these three modules do I want to fit to my ship kind of question.
Yeah, in a world with only one or two meta levels, one pilot will decide what goes on his ship.
Well, actually, the other thing I found really interesting was near the end of the area on modules, specifically regarding to launchers, and I wonder if they're going to take that along with the rest of the, not just launchers, but with other, what's it called, with other offensive modules such as blasters, rails, and things like that. By having two options, you're going to have a low CPU need. You'll have a lower CPU needed one, and one that saves you on power grid. There we go. The words would come to me. I just had to wait for it to happen.
Yeah, I'm not such a huge fan of that. I mean, it's cool in concept, but like when you look at the distribution of modules that take CPU versus power grid and those types of modules, like I really hope they kind of make it more specialized than just like, hey, here's a fucking, you know, something that uses one CPU that now uses half a CPU. Like, you need to tailor those meta changes, those meta bonuses to like what those modules actually use, because nobody is putting like auto cannons on a fucking ship and being like, man, I wish I had more CPU for these, you know?
Yeah, and likewise, if you're using a damage control, no one's going to be too excited if there's a 0.75 power grid option, a 0.5 power grid option.
Well, no, I think if you look at it, what they were talking about was specifically with guns, because with guns and launchers, there was going to be a lower CPU version, which will have a trade-off in bonuses, and then a lower power grid option. It seemed to me that when you were talking about the other modules, particularly like damage controls, because that was one of the ones that they had, you know, specifically spelled out with damage controls, is that there was going to be three options. You were going to have the tech one, you were going to have the meta, now what they call their meta version, then you were going to have the tech two, and then you're going to have the Cosmos and the faction ones. So there's not going to be a lot of options there as far as fit. Your biggest options are coming from, specifically, going to be coming in the offensive modules, such as, you know, guns, launchers, and so on and so forth.
I mean, realistically, it's just going to make, like, the boundaries of fitting a little less flexible. Being able to, like, save a varying amount of CPU and being able to tailor your resist to that, because maybe you need like all 10 or 12 of the CPU that something like an internal force field array is going to save you and still get the resists, but like, you know, the meta modules, you were able to save exactly as much CPU as you wanted to or needed to and still keep the bonuses that they provide as high as possible. So like those boundaries of fittings that we used to be able to bend just ever so slightly are going to get a little more rigid.
Yeah, but I think that's going to help in taking some of the complexity out of the game for the newer players, which will lend to the new player experience. I am not a proponent of making Eve dumb or making Eve easy. That's not what I want to do, but I mean, I think we all can agree on this channel that we've all spent far too many hours EFT warrioring fits, trying to squeeze every little bit of grid and CPU that we can out of something, sometimes to our own detriment, and overthinking fits because there are so many options.
I don't know.
I think it's certainly a newbie trap, how it's currently laid out. I mean, yes. We've have to unlearn so many bad habits from people when they come into Noir in terms of fitting. Like, eventually, just, we tried for the longest time to not have, like, oh, you must fit this way kind of guidelines, but eventually it was just more work than it was worth. You know, people just don't know because the options are so overwhelming and because the conventions for how to fit things properly are not very well documented outside of certain corps. And those corps, just like we did eventually, just said, hey, here's a pre-fit ship, just do it this way, because it's much easier.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, as you say, it's a newbie trap, and even if you can't do some of the weird things that you could do in the case where this one meta that's going away might be the best, I think you're going to end up with a little bit more complexity than you would otherwise.
Well, and the other thing, I know that we're kind of derailing this, but the nice thing is something that they also said, which was Tech 2 modules are going to be, again, going to be the top of the heap if you're comparing it between T1 meta and then T2. T2 is always going to win out as far as, you know, what you're going to get as far as bonus. There isn't going to be a, I guess, what's the best way to put it, a... another option that's not as effective.
Well, yeah, so like in the game now, there's more than a couple modules, T2 modules, that just aren't worth using because they provide exactly the same bonuses as meta, and you're right, that is fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, guys, moving on. 00 Sav, obviously a big deal for many people. Us certainly included in one form or another. It was a pretty awesome discussion, and in the discussion, CCP Fozzy outlined kind of two or three main things that CCP is prototyping right now in terms of what will be the new Sav system. One is a no Sav contest, where system ownership doesn't necessarily matter. It's all structures. So if you want to put a TCU down, you put a TCU down. If some other dude puts a TCU down, he's got a TCU there, and you have to go kick it over. And all the sovereignty-related structures, now you could have them all sort of going simultaneously. If you want to stop someone's sovereignty structure, stop their use of it, you have to actually go stop them. There's no game system that's obscuring their access to it. And the other one is like a proper occupancy system whereby if you use the space, it's going to be almost impossible for you to lose it. And if you're not using the space, it's going to be extremely easy for you to lose it. The CCP seemed a little fuzzy on... where exactly that switchover is going to happen and what mechanic will be the... Well...
Catalyst.
I mean, obviously there has to be something where once you get to like the absolute minimum point for using space, does it just fade away entirely? And if it doesn't, how does person coming in take it from you? That was not exactly discussed in detail.
I don't see that one being too feasible, honestly.
I see it being more feasible than the other one, which just seems, I don't know, too bare bones. Like, it's... unless the things that, because the whole idea of Sav is like building up your little space empire, space sandcastle. How much can you really build up and develop with these things that they're talking about adding in? It doesn't seem like very much to me.
Go ahead, Ellen.
You have your station, you know, you have your industrial facilities to the extent that those are a part of or separate from that. You have whatever kinds of facilities. Like, if you think about an iHub and what you put out as iHub upgrades, a lot of those could be their own structures. And I think just putting those on their own structures, independently destructible, would do a lot for, you know, kind of would make a kind of hybrid between Dominion and PosSov. I think the NoSov one, and I forget how much this came through in the minutes, the NoSov one was actually the one that I was most excited about, just because CCP isn't making any rules. They aren't, you know, there's no system that can be gamed about, you know, taking ownership of a system. It's just, do I have a TCU in it? Okay, then it's mine. You know, as far as what I'm going to do with it, it's not CCP's made some kind of rules or mechanics for it. It's, what am I actually doing with it? And that appeals to me a lot more than something which says, oh, you know, this, something that says, oh, you know, have you killed 10 rats today? Well, here's +1 sov point. You know, if it could be something that was actually controlled by the alliances themselves and managed by the alliances themselves and then put back into the system in terms of investment, I think that's way more exciting than something that CCP could ever come up with.
But at least the vibe that I got was that there is no like thing that an alliance could do that puts back into reinvestment, at least right now. I think the issue with the freeform Sov thing is that there's not a whole lot you can do. Like, if your pitch was, hey, we're going to remove Sov, and whatever you do with your systems, whatever you do with it, you can make it whatever you want. There's just not enough compelling options there, like to have some kind of unique thing. Like right now, all 0-0 systems are pretty much fundamentally the same. And if you're just going to add, if you're just going to take away all the ownership concept of it, like at the minimum, you're going to have to add some kind of timer probably to reinforce TCUs. It's still structure grind based, which sucks. I'm not a big fan of. It just seems strange. It is kind of nice to get away from the system, but having it be freeform isn't great if there's really only one way you can go with it, and if that one way is grinding structures or having structures that need to get destroyed, basically the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that aspect, but I think you're still... I think it shifts the question from being, what should we make the Sov mechanics, to what cool things should alliances be able to do in their space? And I think what cool things should alliances be able to do in their space is a much more interesting and ultimately rewarding question for CCP to be asking.
Yeah, so...
I agree with that. I just think there's got to be something more than POS gameplay here. Because right now you can put up a POS and say, okay, I control the system, my POS is here. And
you're right.
If you want to kick me out of the system, you have to go take my POS down. It's got to be something more than that.
And you still have to be able to kick them out of the system, right? Like, you want to talk about a static nullsec now, making it even harder to kick people out of their space? Like, you really think that's going to generate people moving or fighting or any other movement other than, hey, we don't want this space anymore, now you can have it? Like, that is a terrible idea.
I'm not sure which direction you're coming down on there, Turtle.
The if you live there, it's almost impossible to take the space from you. Like that. The second one, the one they were fuzzy at.
Well, you need to be active, not just be there, like be doing stuff in space.
Yeah, that's fine. That is probably, you know, a fair number of people in Nullsec. Like, that's not really like a game breaker. Being active is not really like a game breaker.
It is fine. You'd be surprised.
Well,
a lot of the map is going to go dark if that's the case, or be extremely, extremely takeable. And I think that encourages empires to focus on areas where they actually are and can power project to, rather than, you know, how quickly can they get to whatever TCU is under attack.
But, or just keep spamming TCUs at someone until they literally can't keep up with how many TCUs, in which case we're just back to the old POS system, which was the people's least favorite aspect of the old POS system.
That's true, but Game of Cloister Your Empires doesn't really, like, create any dynamic interaction. I mean, it's going to create neighbors, and people will fill in the dark space, because you're right, there's a lot of space that's unused, and in a system like that, would immediately go up for grabs. But the space that it is already grabbed, you're not going to see any content generation out of a Sov system that works like any in any way. If they hold the space, it's not worth you taking. Like,
well, that's one area where I disagreed with Fuzzy. I don't think it should be almost impossible to lose your space if you're active in it. I think you should still have to defend it like you defend anything else, but it should become progressively easier the less active you are, to the point where if you're not active there much at all, it's trivial to take it. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm not fine with any kind of like system invulnerability, but I don't really think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're kind of arriving at here is a lot the same what we arrived at the summit, which is realistically any system that can work is going to be somewhere in between the two. But I think kind of keeping our eyes on anarchy is a little bit sweeter for... in terms of something that'll actually be workable, because if you think about what's unworkable about Dominion, part of it is just the sheer... You know, you could write a textbook on Dominion Sov, and it would be just as entertaining to read. And I don't want to get a new system that's something like that again.
I agree, but if you just switch to, okay, we're taking the actual Sov part of it away, but we still have every structure in place and nothing's changing there, what are you really doing? Like, how are you improving the current system? You're not, really. Like, it's just the same system, but without the Sov label, really.
I mean, I guess. It totally depends. I think You know, and this is where it kind of like overlaps with the occupancy stuff, because it's like, well, you know, so we're looking at structures. How should those structures be structured? You know, and then you get into things like maybe they have more hit points if you continuously feed them LP or something like that. I mean, that kind of thing is where the hybridization comes in, and it doesn't have to be the same as grinding a Dickstar large paws. It could be just like shooting at a mobile depot, which isn't nearly so painful.
Yeah, I think like part of the mechanic you're getting at, Allie, is actually an example I had in my head too, was in the New Civilization, like when you build new things, you are given a choice. Like, you get a generic benefit or a generalized benefit from what you just did, but then you're given a choice as to like a specialized benefit that kind of you tailor towards what you're doing, or, you know, in Civilization, where you're at in the game, you know, your playstyle, etc., etc. But it's a really easy idea to kind of just port over to Eve. And concept is, as you do these things, set these benchmarks for things that you do, and then give it a little customization, like be able to choose specialized upgrades that come out of these structures. And once these structures start doing a whole bunch of different shit based on what you as an alliance or a coalition want them to do, like, then structure bashing doesn't seem as crazy an idea. Like, structures remaining in SAV seems a little bit more of a better idea.
Well, I think structures should remain, but what I'm hoping is that it's decoupled from the actual SAV taking thing, which is where I think the freeform fails, but occupancy can succeed at.
I disagree. I think the freeform completely succeeds in that I don't have to remove any of your structures necessarily to start putting up mine. I don't have to remove, and I don't, you know, I could even just start squatting in a system and investing in it, and it puts, I hesitate to say this, but it brings in, I think, one of the things that's more successful about wormhole space over NullSec, in that it is actually just descriptive about, you know, well, all right, who's in the hole? Why are they there?
Well, the difference is in wormholes, it's like a extremely gated community. If you live there full time, you can realistically monitor and control access of everyone that comes in. And, you know, that's like, it's your space because you can live there and push anybody else out. But I mean,
that's like,
you're not claiming sovereignty in a wormhole space. It's all extremely informal, and it is the POS gameplay.
And
like, it's got to be something more for K-Space. You want to be able to put your name on the map, right? Control that area.
That's what the TCU is for. Like, it's literally just a flag that you're kind of putting in the ground, and it's, you know, it doesn't have to have any more meaning than this is my flag, and this flag gets broadcasted to the API and whatnot. And if I want to knock over someone else's flag, then I knock over their flag. And I think that approach gets you further away from the structures than does anything where having SOV has more meaning than, you know, oh, well, I've built up all this stuff. I live here, and I've made my pillow fort.
I just think then there's no point. Why have the SOV system anyway? Let's just have passes again.
It's an inspirational, like, if we're really just going to go knock down flags for the sake of knocking down flags, like, I mean, wormholes right now, they exist in a pre-Dominion system, basically. A pre-Dominion system without being able to put your flag in the ground. And it's, I don't know, it's a pretty, it's like a different world. But yeah, then why bother having it? Because, I mean, realistically, that flag, more times than not, is just going to make you a target for people that do enjoy knocking over flags. And, I mean, without any sort of, like, systemized or specific benefit to having your flag in the ground, nobody, I don't think, is really going
to. And there's no incentive to invest in your space if they could just come knock it all, like, sweep it all away at the drop of a hat. Now, that's a problem you see in wormhole space all the time. When people get evicted, they lose, like, billions. Tens, if not hundreds of billions in some cases.
Well, and, that's, you know, that's pauses right there. I mean, that's just having your shit in pauses.
But if you're out in K-Space where it's a lot easier to lose your crap because of super capitals, because of having your name on the map and being more visible of a target, and because there's no, like, mass limits, you know, you're basically freezing small alliances out of space, and you're freezing anyone that's not the top dog from investing in anything, because if you don't have the critical mass of defense to keep everybody else at, you could lose all your stuff as, like, literally as soon as the person that does has that decides they want to do it. And there's no buffer for you to fight them back. There's no defender's advantage. There's no time for you to stall and get allies. It's just, oh, there's a thing, I'm going to go blow it up, just like it's any other thing. And if you have roving gangs of supercarriers that just run around and do that all day, which you absolutely would, then that's kind of like, eh. So you would have to give a lot of stuff reinforcement timers if you're going to make that, like, the thing. And then it's just like, well, you know what?
We're even deeper into the current system with even more necessary... or even an even greater need for critical mass.
Yeah.
There's, like, literally no way, good way to touch this issue, right? Like, any way you come from it, like, there's gonna be issues.
Hybrid is probably the way to go. CCP Fozzie talked about tracking, like, system GDP. I think that's fantastic. It's much better than, hey, shoot 10 rats, get a sovereignty point. Just find out what players are normally doing there. Are they harvesting PI? Are they mining? Are they ratting? Are they blowing up ships? You know, we have now in the game metrics to track at least the ship blowing up part of things. I know CCP's got metrics to track the other things, not really in an economic sense necessarily, but certainly they can tell how much of a thing is going on. Wouldn't be too much of a jump to drill down on that a little bit. And then just reward players for naturally using their space how they're doing it. And provide a system where they can honor their blues and say, hey, blue guy, you can come in here and use our space too. We'll get the benefit of it. You get the space. Like a treaty type thing. Sort of like renting, but as we touched on, old school renting is going to go away. New school renting could come in where you actually have, okay, people that are blue, come live with us so we can pack things in closer together. And, you know, you can be in our space, but you're not going to compete with us. In other words, in terms of the number game, how much ISK that we're generating out of this system, you're going to count to that rather than count against it. And then have lots of structures, have lots of infrastructure you can invest in and put down, and it's attackable, but if you lose it, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's just going to be part of a pendulum. Like, you're going in, you can lose things granularly. You're not going to get wiped completely as soon as someone looks at you with a carrier fleet.
And the whole treaties thing was something that I did bring up at the summit. It just, you know, talking about how to get other alliances involved and stuff, because, you know, as I have said, I haven't forgotten growing up in Providence. I haven't forgotten that kind of need.
I mean, I get where CCP is coming from. It would be way simpler to just implement a POS system, basically, again. I get it. But better. But exactly the same. Explain to me how it would be different, Allie.
I mean, it wouldn't involve POSs, which suck.
No, excuse me, TCUs, not POSs.
I mean,
whoever has more TCUs, not POSs, is going to have their flag on the map.
It would be better in terms of mostly... it would get pushed away from that and put... There was a mechanical advantage to having POSs. And not having that mechanical advantage removes the necessity from, you know, putting POSs on all the moons.
She's honestly right. There were some mechanical advantages to it.
There were mechanical advantages to having a POS, not to having 20 POSs.
Well, there are mechanical advantages to having more POSs.
More. The more POSs you had, the more time you had to respond.
Right, so now you don't have more time to respond. It's just whoever has the more TCUs is going to get the name on the map.
Yeah, and that...
And
you know, so
you don't have to fuel them. But so you can have... There's no, like, moon limit. So you can have
hundreds, if not thousands, of TCUs littering a system if Goonswarm wants to do that.
What if TCUs were just unique? Like, there can be one thing that's unique. So you have to blow up someone else's TCU to put down your own.
That's a decent idea. Like, honestly, the TCU game of, like, keeping TCUs on gates is just such a shitty part of Sov Warfare.
You mean SBUs?
Yeah, SBUs, excuse me. It's just, yeah, like, the whole SBUing system is just not where you want to be. Like, making it unique would actually be kind of cool.
I'm trying to game this out. If you throw down one, like, 20 million hit point, no reinforcement timer, unique structure, that's...
But yeah. Does sovereignty give you, like, control of the station? Because realistically, going into an enemy's...
No, controlling the station gives you control of the station.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's kind of what I was fleshing out. So, like, an enemy comes into your space, blows up your TCU, drops their own. You're fucking living in the system. Like, you can just go respond, knock theirs over. They have to figure out a way, either putting up a pause or staying within, like, bridge range or something, to be able to stay in the area to respond to it without having the logistics of something like a station, which makes life really cushy in null set.
But if your flag can get knocked down so easily and put back just as easily, like, why bother even defend it? Like, it's not even a thing you would fight over. You just, like, now, well, wait till they're gone and throw it up again.
I mean, you're still going to have to fight over it, I guess, in the way that you have to, like, shoot it. And, I mean, if both parties really want to fight over it. But, I mean, isn't that, like, basically 90% of EVE right now is one party doesn't want to fight the other? So, I mean, what's new?
I mean, yeah, and if you... It looks kind of bad. Like, it would look pretty bad if, you know, your Sov dropped and was replaced with your mortal enemy's Sov. And no matter how many posts you can make on Reddit about how we didn't want that flag anyway, and we're still living here, we're still doing great, we didn't actually give a shit. That looks pretty bad. Like, appearances matter in this game.
It's like when Scrooge McDuck has, like, a dollar fly out of his wallet and go into the wind. Ah, ha, ha, your dollar's gone. Just goes, yeah, all right. Pulls out another 100 of them. Like, if, say, Goonswarm's capital system, someone roams in there with, like, I don't know, a bunch of taluses and blows it up and puts down their own thing. Okay. Like, what do they care? There's no reason to care about that. They'll just go replace it. And then they'll shitpost about, ha, you could only take our Sov for an hour or whatever it was.
It's
fine. That's an hour more than they're taking it now.
And it's Sov with no consequence. It doesn't hurt their wallet. It doesn't hurt their morale. It doesn't hurt anything, really.
It does hurt morale a little bit if you keep seeing... It does hurt morale a little bit if you keep seeing stuff drop. And sure, you could not... You could decide not to put up a flag and not to say this is my space, but that's not what people do. I mean, I think we're running into... I'm suggesting that EVE players are not as rational as you're kind of thinking they are here.
They don't... Well, I mean, there's still some benefit as it sits now to throwing up sovereignty. So, I mean, they're doing it now because there's a benefit. I think what Alex is getting at is that if you remove any tangible benefit from putting up your flag, then people probably aren't going to want to, because it's an ISK cost, and it's also a time cost. I mean, if you have somebody come and blowing up your TCU every six hours, you know, are you really going to want to have to form every 6 hours to go blow up a structure?
But what I'm saying is they're not going to form every 6 hours. They're going to form when they get around to it, because there's no incentive for them to do it any quicker.
Well, I think we all agree that there needs to be some kind of incentive, whether it's like the proverbial, oh, this is my land, I'm going to put a flag down for the sake of it, or it provides benefits to the system. Like, there has to be some benefit to it.
And really, you should probably try to address both crowds, because the hybrid of the two is who's out there in 0-0 and who plans to go out there in 0-0. No one wants just the system. They want a system they can invest in and make money off of.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just saying you decouple the investment from the flag business, and then people build things to basically, like, wave their dicks around in space all the time.
Yeah, I guess.
Insert Avatar joke here.
Well, just any kind of the structure grind thing is something I was really hoping would get canned in the Sov revamp. And going from a system to an entirely structure-based system, not ideal to me.
I just don't see how you get away from structures as a whole. I mean, the scheme is, in so many ways, just built completely around structures.
Yeah, but, I mean, you might have to include it somewhere, like, to even an occupancy thing, like physically removing the other guy's TCU would probably take some effort. But, you know, I'd rather have that be an afterthought thing to actually winning the fights and controlling the system than, like, a constant structure ping pong.
Perhaps a new module that stops you from medical cloning to back to the station that you're in?
Every year you get to change your clone. It's like Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think we rode that one into the ground. We'll see what CCP comes up with. Fingers crossed it'll be... Well, fingers crossed it'll be better than Dominion, which either one probably would be. It would just, for me, be a shame to go back to the POS mod, the POS system without the POSes.
What if you had something you could anchor inside of the POS for benefit? Like, give it a reason to shoot that POS.
No, shooting the POSes, please.
What if it's anchored on the outside?
No shooting
and you just had
POSes,
to encap it. You wouldn't even have to shoot the POS. What if you just encapped it? It's a gun. It's on the outside.
Yeah, well, so what if it is? I don't get the point of that.
Well, it's something to shoot that actually would give, like, a financial detriment. Like, maybe this object is in the way that, like, faction warfare, when you level a system up, gives you bonus slots to your station or shit like that.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Minor point, probably, although I'm sure someone on the podcast will have a strong opinion about it. You will no longer be able to shoot your court mates in high sec without incurring Concord Wrath.
I had a strong opinion about that in the minutes.
Sucks.
Me no likey.
The fuck? So, basically, the good old days of AWOCs are gonna go. Like, for all intents and purposes.
No, AWOCsing will still be there, but...
Well, it'll be there in the way that you could suicide gank the dude anyways, because now that's the mechanic. If Concord's right. Getting involved, you're just suicide ganking.
Also, be there in the sense that you can still do whatever you want to your courtmates in low sec and null sec. I'm bummed for the loss of AWOCsing, and if you read in the minutes, I think
so. Everyone's clear. AWOCsing means using blue standings to kill people, not being in their corp. This is Safari. Okay.
Safari. I'm a little disappointed in the loss of Safaris. I don't think it's... I think there's other ways to achieve the same goals that CCP has that would not remove something. I think Safaris do add an avenue for basically players to get at other players or organizations that they don't like. But that's kind of, you know, people may agree, people may disagree. There's some arguments for, you know, what does this do to people's willingness to get in a corp, which affects player retention, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know that anyone's ever come up with some hard numbers on that, and I'd really like them to. The thing that does bother me is everyone says that, you know, this doesn't change anything about what you can do in terms of, you know, training and stuff in a corp, and that's not entirely true. It's going to be a whole hell of a lot harder to do scrimmages and skirmishes in high sec inside of a corp, completely consensual PvP, after this comes out.
You'll need to use the test server.
Yeah. I mean,
you need to use the test server.
Which you should probably be doing anyway, because why would you blow up your own corp ships?
Yeah, you can stop before you blow them up.
In a scrimmage situation? Not usually. If it's one-on-one, you can use a duel. If it gets larger than that, having everybody stop before a dude's tank goes bust is usually pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, we did it fine in VN mostly because the dude was always in a bigger tank than the attackers. We were just doing combat. This is sort of going back to some of the first things that I remember when I resubscribed. We did a whole bunch of combat exercises in HiSec before to kind of get the newbies up to speed before going out on roams to apply them in NullSec. And that's dead, basically. I mean, yes, you could all duel. Everyone can duel everyone else. Everyone can duel the target for the test scrimmage, but then, you know, he's on the other side of the gate and he's talking for 5 minutes, or someone forgets, or...
Warp to a deep safe, go suspect. Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, I mean, it's still... You've still got to deal with the timers and stuff. That's... I Concorded myself during these exercises because I couldn't drop Corp for 24 hours due to being CEO, and my suspect flag dropped at one point, and I Concorded myself. There are options, but they're all a bigger pain in the ass than what we have now.
I mean,
yes, that is true.
Realistically, I was just going to say, like, realistically, what this is doing is it's taking a tool out of the sandbox without replacing it. Like, granted, it was, like, one of the dark side of the forces tools, I guess, you know, and I've never used the word Safari, and I fucking refuse to start. So, shooting blues, I mean, that was like, one of those tools you had along, like, scamming and that kind of stuff. The dark side that's acceptable, but, like, when you remove these tools, like, you got to replace them with something. Like, don't take shit out of the sandbox without coming up with something to replace it. Like, okay, put an option in where you can go rogue on your corp, where you're a suspect to everyone in your corp, but you can freely engage. So if they want to chase you down, yeah, they sure as hell can.
Yeah, you know, fix the logistics situation. I mean, one of the things, I don't know if I made it in, I don't know what all made it in the minutes. I, you know, one of the things that I would, you know, that I'd love to see is like, all right, so here's put this deployable down, and then it just turns off Concord in a 125 kilometer radius, you know, or turns off Concord for people within your alliance, your corp, or something like that. Online
turns
time,
off
2 minutes.
Concord. Period. Make it happen.
Yeah, online time. Online time. 2 minutes. And you. You don't get a suspect timer for shooting it. There you go.
That would actually be so awesome. Although I suspect if CCP ever implements it, they'll add the lame restriction that you can't anchor it around a station or a gate.
Yes.
Because that's taking out a lot of the fun aspect of that particular thing.
And you can still, you know, you can get people you think are botting in missions or AFKing missions or whatever. If it's going to take you 5 minutes to notice, or 2 minutes to notice, or whatever the heck to notice that this is ticking down, then maybe you have a problem.
Yeah, well, I'm fine with that. Put it in missions. Mwahaha.
Yeah, put it in missions, put it on, you know.
You should totally be able to put it on gates, though. Totally be able to put it on gates.
No,
that would bring back the glory days of the HiSec gate camp. Which were so much fun. That concept died just after I joined, and people still talk about it to this day. When Moo took on Concord, I don't know if you ever heard about it, Allie, but at one point,
yes, I have.
Yeah, see, everybody's heard about this. We need this again.
I'd like to be able to go back to the days where you could kill Concord.
I don't know if we want to go there.
No, well, I would at least like to be able to turn them off. So. You can go, hey, all right, I'm going to take on, in HiSec, all comers. And let's bring it on, man.
That would be awesome. It sounds like a technical standpoint at this point now, but...
Well, it's whether CCP would be willing to do something like that, and I doubt they will. But it would be awesome.
They'd have to be willing to code it, because I bet you Concord doesn't have a light switch.
Yeah, true. Especially an AoE light switch. What else? I'm okay with it, honestly. I know that a lot of the guys that are in Crime and Punishment and all those dudes are going to be upset about it, but, you know, why you were able to shoot your corp and not your alliance to me was never clear, and I'm happy for this to go away. It doesn't make much sense, and it was difficult to explain to new players because there was no justification for it. And there's no indication that it's the case when they join a corp, so I can easily see where some issues lie in there. All told, I would love for them to replace it with the kind of module that Ali is talking about, but in and of itself, probably a needed change. I don't think it's going to do anything that CCP is talking about, where it's going to like increase recruitment or anything like that, because honestly, unless that person had a history of doing it, it really wasn't an obstacle to recruitment in the first place.
And people are still going to have to do all that work to, like, I think Falcon had the example of doing all this work to do recruitment. People are still going to have to do a hell of a lot of work to do recruitment in low sec and null sec. That doesn't change at all.
And that really doesn't even change at all in high sec either, because you can still steal things, you can still feed intel, all that kind of stuff. Actual cases of people shooting you were relatively small and confined to a bunch of well-known actors. So, I mean, really, you didn't take away much there in terms of that. I think just in terms of like a all of Eve's mechanics should make sense in the context of the game context, I think this change needed to be made. But in terms of like gameplay, you took something away. You're not adding any benefit, really. If you want to make recruitment easier and safer, you got to really hit the recruitment issue, which I think they are. Pretty sure I noted this a ways down, but apparently they had someone like outside the game go take a look at the corp role system, and there's like a small novel's worth of documentation.
Yeah,
how it works.
Third-party QAers.
Which is freaking insane. So you want to help recruitment, do that, and make identifying alts easier, which they never will, because that's sort of anti-how Eve is.
Yeah.
But those are the two things, really. That's what drives recruitment issues, that alts are such a big deal, and that when you bring someone in, they can cause all kinds of trouble. That has nothing to do with them directly shooting you. Alliance logos. Such rage. So first of all, someone from CCP Legal put this line out there. So players take a view that they own a logo and give game companies perpetual right to use it. It's nice in theory, but it isn't practical. It still allows other players to sue each other or game companies if they use the logo in a way they don't allow. It also doesn't cover situations where multiple people have created a logo and no one person can give a valid license. That is such a cop-out answer, and I really one pet peeve I have with CCP is that they've hung on to this defense for so long. And it was like everything from the ships. Well, ship skinning is, I guess, a slightly different defense, but like logos on ships and all that kind of stuff. Just have them sign away the ability to sue people over the use. You can void that legal right very easily. You have it be in the thing, like, hey, you want to submit your logo to us? Great. You can use it outside the game to, like, sell stuff or do whatever with it, put it on whatever. But you can't sue us for using it, and you can't sue any other players for using it unless they are making money off it.
I'm not exactly
done.
Sure. Well, you say that, but I mean, I would love to hear a lawyer, especially some sort of copyright lawyer who knows copyright law internationally, as to how that would pipe up, because you're not just signing a waiver in Iceland. You're not just signing a waiver in America. You're signing a waiver between someone who lives in a country and someone who might live halfway across the world with a completely different legal system and a completely different set of copyright laws. Like, there is no one form fills all for this problem, especially not with copyright law.
Countries that don't respect copyright law aren't going to respect whatever system they put in.
Well, no, it doesn't have to do with respecting copyright law or not. It's just that the boundaries of what you can and cannot do may change from country to country based on their own copyright law. So somebody who could sue you one place wouldn't have grounds to sue in another, and it's just, what do? Do you really put a legal team on that case so people can use the fat bee to sell shirts?
No, you just remove CCP from the process entirely of someone like in Nully is selling Fat Bee with a big dick on it to like piss off Goonswarm. Let Goonswarm take care of it if it's that important to them. It doesn't have anything to do with CCP. They don't have to worry about it.
But does that fall under parody? Same as Calvin and pissing on stuff, you know? Like
exactly, that's a good question. And you know who should answer it? Not CCP.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, real like the conversation from the minutes that we have here, I mean, it really does present both points. Of, you know, on one hand, it's been, what, 11 years, and they've never actually been sued for any sort of intellectual property rights. But then on the other hand, it really only does take one to screw it up for everybody.
Again, does it, though? Because I really don't get CCP's... Like, they say that they would be on the hook for it, but it's really not clear how, under what legal justification, that would be the case. They're assuming that they do have ownership of it, but if they declare that they don't have ownership of it, just have a perpetual license to use it. Like, I just don't get it. And maybe my legal background is not sufficient enough, but I did study some copyright law when I was in grad school, and I'm pretty sure they're good on this. Like, at the minimum, it wouldn't be their business. And then that would be it. It would be, like, the simplest legal case. Oh, I'm going to sue CCP. You're using my logo in a way that I don't like. Or you're making money off my logo. The judge looks at it and goes, oh, did you submit your logo to them using this thing that says clearly that you're voiding all your right to sue them over it? Yeah, I did do that.
I don't
think
they're...
you've waived it. Just like I waive my right to sue someone if I, like, go to a bull riding contest and I get thrown off the bull. Don't get to sue them for being thrown off the bull because
well,
I signed a waiver.
Well, you can if there's negligence involved. Any good lawyer can shred a waiver. Like, from what I can tell, it sounds like CCP isn't worried so much about them getting sued, but rather than having, like, some player-on-player litigation, which would be totally not good for the community or the game as a whole, because, I mean, that could get out of hand pretty quick. And so I can kind of see them... trying to protect players from something that might not be legally murky for them per se, but it could become extremely murky for the players, and I don't think that's something they want really haunting their environment.
But the same goes for any kind of original EVE-based content, music, any that goes for any IP. Why are Alliance logos special in that sense? They're not.
I mean, because they go in the game. In terms of player-created content, it's because they're going in the game and being packaged with the game.
But that has nothing to do with player-to-player legal disputes.
No,
like, it being in the
why...
game has no effect on that whatsoever.
Right, but so the
but that's
system...
why CCP cares.
The system you're getting at, though, is that the CCP waives their intellectual rights to it, so who owns it? The person that made it. So if another player is using it, that's where you get your player-on-player. It won't have anything to do with CCP directly. But it sure as hell will indirectly. NullSec is shitty enough without civil litigation.
Space lawyering. But it's I mean, this new, is the kind of thing that's holding back stuff like logos on ships. It's holding back EVE being able to offer merch with logos on it. Or players being able to... Actually, that's the big one. Players being able to offer merch with logos on it. Right now, CCP is walking a very fine line on that one, according to their legal reasoning. And it's one of those things where I really would like to have, like, a noir shirt with the actual logo on it, but the t-shirt company that we were working with wouldn't print it because it was technically CCP's IP. Which is, I mean... Minimum should be mine. If you want to go super technical, I could dig up the guy that made it, and it could be his, and then he can go give it to me. You know what I mean? But, yeah. Like, I would love to have that on a shirt. I'd love for CCP to just be more generous with their licensing in general to really unlock the creative capacities of the player base and have us be able to do things like sell a Declarations of War shirt with a Mollus on it. Like, that would be really awesome to be able to do. And it's all you might not think that's directly tied in, but it is kind of tied in. It's a lot of the same legal reasoning that's going around, and it's really holding back a lot of the dynamism of the Eve community at the highest levels, the content creators, the people that create these identities that get players so excited about the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really shifting, like, it's not removing any legal responsibility, it's really just shifting it off CCP. Like, in a perfect world, if we could remove any sort of, I mean, I guess maybe you don't want to remove the, like, most base levels of intellectual property rights, but I mean, you don't want to just shift the litigation, like, off you and then open the system up, because, I mean, the litigation, the potential for litigation is still going to exist, like, on the player-to-player level. And it comes into those questions of what's a parody, what's not a parody, and then we're back into the whole world of, like, hey, where do you live? Because your copyright law is going to be different. And, I mean, maybe you want to let the players just, like, sort that out, and maybe the detriment that causes is going to be less than the benefit, like, having Fat B on a shirt causes, but I mean, CCP is like super risk conscious, and it, especially from a legal standpoint, if they see something this gray, I don't blame them for not touching it. Well, I mean,
they are,
I guess,
touching it, though.
I could blame it, but
they kind of are touching it, though, one way or the other. It's gonna get touched.
They're having a discussion about it, but I mean, they're not acting on it.
They had tried to act on it a bit earlier, where they wanted to give a $100 licensing fee to people for Alliance logos or something like that.
What's the operative word you just used there?
It got shouted down, which is why they didn't go through with it. But it was like a dev blog, you know what I mean? It was pretty close to being a thing.
But it's not. Walking in stations was pretty close to being a thing.
Technically, walking in stations was a thing.
It still is a thing, technically.
I was going to say, technically, walking in stations is a thing.
Going past the door, technically, was almost a thing.
Going past the door was almost a thing. That's right. The other thing I liked was Scion's description of what Alliance logos mean. I had this copied in. It's kind of long. I don't know if I want to read the whole thing. But it's this represents our space tribe like a flag or a sports logo, part of their identity. And it gives people the opportunity to build on that identity, build a community around it. And all that creates a more rich game experience. I think that is absolutely true. And whatever CCP decides to do, they better keep that in mind. Because the community and that attachment to community, attachment to relationships and identity, is what keeps people in the game for so long. And
you really need to
be careful with that.
Read the first part too, because it is literally something as mundane as the Fat B logo on a TCU and people going out to fly and look at that. That's not even somebody's logo on the ship they're piloting. Like, that's this TCU sitting in space doing nothing in a home system that probably hasn't been looked at sideways in a fucking year. And people are just flying out to this thing to see their logo on it. Like, why would you not want that energy in every corner of your game? Like, put that little spot on the skin for a logo to go on everywhere. Like, if that can really bring that much joy to somebody, like, it's something worth
doing. And he makes
doing.
A fabulous point. The Fat B logo isn't an icon because it's particularly well drawn. It's clip art. It's right. And that's this isn't related to the licensing thing, whether or not you can use your Alliance logo on t-shirts and cups and stuff. This is, you know, putting it on ships, basically, other uses for the Alliance logo.
Which kind of
CCP has always begged that off because, oh, well, we want to make sure that the aesthetic of EVE is preserved. Well, you accepted it, okay, first of all.
Whitewashing every ship with symmetry. Yeah, nice aesthetics. Fuck. No, so, like, my biggest thing with, like, the ship skinning and stuff was that they were charging people to do it. And I mean, the way that Scion lays this out is just like my screaming argument for this being something free. Being able to skin your ships with a logo that means something to you and not having to pay for it.
Whoa, let's be clear. The Alliance logo and ship skinning are two very different
things. Well, they're two different
things,
but they could easily become one thing and you would probably still have to pay for it.
Because it's two separate technical systems.
Well, I mean,
yeah, he's right here.
So you couldn't, you literally could not write a way to put the logo on a ship.
You could have no ship skins in the game and still have Alliance logos on ships. To be clear. But the CCP justification for having neither of those things is the same. So you want to, you know, come at their thought process here and their hang up, basically, which is holding this sort of thing back. I think you should not have to pay for having your Alliance ship on your, or your Alliance logo on your ship. I think you should have to pay to have a skin. I think Alliances should be able to commission skins that they then pay for that their members can use for free.
If you're an Alliance, just put the logo on your ship by default. Like,
yes, exactly. But I mean, like, for instance, they could have the FATB logo and make all their ships pink.
Yeah, see, that would, that's I'm something. I kind of get that. But, like, the Alliance logo on your ship thing means, I think, too much to have it something that people pay for.
Yes, 100% well, agree there.
Well, and I think that that's one of the things that CCP is afraid of, is that they're going to have a bunch of pink Deimoses rolling around all of New Eden.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Stop being so afraid of your players. Like, if it's that important to them, if that's really going to be what their community is about, let it be about that. Is it really that big of a deal? No, it's not.
To me, it's not. But you have to remember, to CCP, this is their big IP. This is their product that they're pushing out. And the last thing that they want is a YouTube video floating around of 100 pink Deimoses flying around in 0-0 and someone doing
Kingblade.
A close-up shot of it going through a regional gate.
Kingblade and CCP Seagull and anyone else involved were already making gigantic space dongs with anchorable warp bubbles.
I know that.
Forget about it, okay? That has flown the fucking coop, okay? Yeah.
I mean, there's no way you can let people control that.
I understand that. I'm not on their side on this. I see where they're coming from and where their fear is, but, I mean, it's a video game. You have people that are going to do this. You're right. There's people that use giant GSCs to make giant phalluses, that make giant space penises with balls and everything. It happens.
Balls and everything.
And there's a few. I've seen some with some drips.
I have seen a cock and balls of warp disruptor bubbles with GSC sperm. So if you have your overview on, it looks like there's little square spermlets popping out of the top of it. That is a thing that's happened in your game, and you're afraid that somebody might make a ship that's pink.
Yeah, exactly. I know that that's what they're afraid of, is that they're afraid that someone is going to come up with this super vulgar, super... they're trying to make something PC out of something that they've already made that anyone with time and enough money in warp bubbles and GSCs can do exactly what you can do. I don't know why they're trying to... I personally don't know why they're trying to make it so difficult to do this. They should just let it happen.
I mean, if you want to talk EVE streaming, which is probably like the most publication they would get off it, I guess what? You can already put whatever graphics you want on the stream. So if they're not showing pink ships in-game, someone will draw a Hello Kitty. Well, they already have the Hello Kitty Manticore.
Yes.
You can just put that over your review, over your chat box. Oh, there's one of your IP ships and it's pink. Oh, no. So terrible. Yeah. No, it's going to want people go, hey, can I get a Hello Kitty Manticore when I play? And then they're going to be so sad when you have to tell them, no, the company won't let you do that.
Exactly, and it's another revenue stream, which is what I don't understand, is that you know, part of this thing is, part of the Alliance Minutes was monetization, and, you know, talking about different ways to monetize. I think it would be fantastic that if you could buy a skinning, you know, item.
Plex a month for an Alliance skin.
Yes.
You can make Alliance skins and offer them to your members for a plex a month. Or a plex per skin per month, whatever. Or per thousand members, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to have some random corporation that wants to roll around in 500, you know, Deimoses that are, you know, flesh pink and shoot video, it's free advertising, and people are going to say, oh, that's funny. Wow, that game actually allows their people to do that? That's pretty epic. I want to be able to go do that.
I want to be one of those flesh-colored space penises.
Yes, exactly.
Where can I sign up to this game? And yes, that is the good part. No one that's already playing is going to be turned off by this. Not a one.
No. And it's going to be more... It's going to be more new players for the bitter vets like us to shoot, or just the vets to shoot. It's going to create more opportunities to possibly bring in the next great alliance leader. You never know. I mean, the big alliance leaders didn't join this game saying to themselves, at least from the ones that I've talked to, didn't say to themselves, you know what? I want to join this game and I want to lead the largest alliance there is and hold the biggest amount of 0-0 Sov. It kind of just happened. And that's the beauty of this game, is it just happens.
So, CCP, let it happen. You already know that life finds a way.
Shh, CCP, it's okay. Shh, CCP, just let it happen. Just relax, let it happen.
And stop those fucking microtransactions.
I'm fine with the microtransactions. I'm fine if you have to pay to skin your ship. I just think there should be an organizational option for me as a CEO to go, okay, for this, like... alliance skin that I would like everybody to have, please skin your ship like this so I can make videos of it and stuff, I will pay for that for you. And like, whatever it is, if it's a big one-time fee, whatever, monthly maintenance fee, whatever it is, I'll pay it if it means I can have all my ships black and white. That's fantastic. I want that. Like, that'd be so cool to have all noir ships, either all white or all black, or some combination, depending on, you know, what we can do here. That would be great. And we know that the technical capability exists. So we're just asking CCP to please let us become energized and more evangelistic about the game and more strongly identify with these communities that keep us playing the game for long periods of time and skin the ships, please.
And contribute tons and tons of revenue to your game.
Mm-hmm. You can hire more staff. Thumbs up. Hire more people to screen the Alliance logos. It's a win-win, guys. I put a little note here to poke Allie and make fun of her for all the typos that were in the minutes. There's like one every other paragraph. Disk. I guess they had to be rushing, you know.
Yeah, well, it threw me off when, you know, something said it and I was looking at T.I. I was like, that doesn't seem right.
The rapper?
Yeah.
For all we know.
Exactly.
That's the feeding into the CCPs just using the CSM for PR and people only join for all the perks. All of a sudden, in the middle of the conference, they just had a T.I. concert. Incredible. I want to be a CSM again.
You heard it here first, folks. Alec is running for CSM.
Oh, God. 2015. No.
2015 Alexei card CSM.
I'm not running for president.
Yeah. Alexei card CSM 2015. You heard it here first, folks. Everyone get out and vote.
Oh, let's see what else we got here. Seagull, again, talking about the mentality of the company. This was pretty awesome. It's time to get over Incarna and start taking risks again. Educated and calculated risks, of course, but we need to make sure that we deliver solid content to veteran players. We've trained players to be afraid of us doing big things. We put something big out that was half done and never got touched again. Us doing something big, such as industry, means CCP is going to mess it up again and we will have to pick up the mess. We internally have become scared in a sense of making bolder changes to the game so that we know we can control the outcome, because we do not want to be perceived as messing up again. That predictability is boring everyone to death now. We need to challenge and move forward with solid plans owned by teams that are building the vision in their hands. We need to turn up the volume. Yes.
I didn't read the quote verbatim, but did she directly state that Incarna was the half-born child that was aborted?
She implied it, but I think the key takeaway from all of that is it's time to get over Inkarna, and that she has understood that we've trained players to be afraid of us doing big things, but that she's committed to changing it. But it's time to get over Inkarna is the thing.
I think we all are afraid of another Inkarna. I mean, it was just poorly handled. I mean, I know it's different management now at the top than it was. And, you know, I'm willing to give her a fair shake at wowing me and impressing me.
But after the fixes to faction warfare, changes to industry, if they do another big thing right, maybe it's time to be okay to be excited about that stuff. You know what I mean?
I do. I will always have cautious optimism when it comes to CCP and big ticket items, the big wow factor items, because their track record. I mean, going back to it, it's track record.
Yeah, but there's only so much track record we can look at without understanding that the company has, in a lot of ways, turned a new leaf in the past couple of years.
Oh, yeah. They have.
They have had a huge wake up call. Starting with CSM6 onward.
I'm pretty bitter vet, but like even I've gotten over Inkarna.
Although I'd still like to see the door open.
Yeah, I would too, dude. I was actually pretty on board with the whole ambulation thing. I wasn't on board with it taking up like 2 years of development cycles, but...
No, I do... I was actually... I'm with you, Turtle. I was one of the few that were super excited to see what they could do. With Inkarna, with walking in stations and what it presented, I think they left something super that could have potentially been super awesome on the table, and I'd like to see them eventually return to it, maybe scale it down a bit, but I'd like to see them iterate on it eventually. Not saying that it should be in the next 3 to 6 months or a year, but I definitely think that on the roadmap it should be back on the iteration table.
Well, speaking of the roadmap, once they take care of PAS, they take care of the fact that alliances don't really exist, they take care of the corporate management interface, take care of the ship skinning issue, they take care of SAV, they put in the new player Stargates, maybe they do something with mining, maybe they do something with comets, maybe they do something with intelligence tools, all those big things have been coming around and in the water. After that, like, it's kind of wide open. Like, in terms of big critical problems to the game, like, those are 8 things that they could bang out. And then I would be like, well, we don't have a big legacy structure that's left that's still holding us back, except maybe, generally speaking, the whole PvP and ship, or PvE and ship control dynamic being sort of ancient. But that's a huge, like, the most massive project. Recoding Eve to make it multi-threaded is a massive project that's even beyond changing a game structure.
And but even like the PvP stuff, Ryze was talking about, well, you know, maybe we should look into this.
Hey, and I encourage them to do it. I would be more interested in having a more dynamic piloting experience that makes PvE not so predictable, just because I can physically do more things where it's physically more challenging than just locking and pressing a button. But
everyone likes to control click and press F1.
Right. And enough people like it that I don't think it's a huge issue. So once you bang out those 8 things, I think things are pretty wide open. They could go back to ambulation, actually put in some decent gameplay, like what was shown at not this year's Eve London, not even last year's Eve London, but one of the previous Eve Londons. They showed some really raw alpha gameplay of what avatar-based gameplay could be, and having gotten a more detailed description of that in the CSM, the concept of it is really exciting. It would be a fun thing that I would like to do. So once the critical stuff is out of the way and the game's in a healthy place, you know, I'm fine with them going back to that. As long as they go into it with the focus on the gameplay and how it's actually going to fit into the game and have it be something that's social and players can interact in, not you just go into this room where you're locked by yourself and he can walk around and not do anything.
Yeah. Like, I think this might change a little bit if okay, so, like, the whole thing for ambulation for me was, like, the change of pace of where the entire game is basically centered around you looking at a ship as opposed to, like, your character itself, which you put, like, a lot of time into creating. Like, they came out with this awesome character creator that does a really super cool job of, like, letting you kind of customize who you are so that you can never see that person again. Like,
right.
So is this going to change at all if the roadmap of having Eve, Valkyrie, and Legion, like, kind of all on the same platform and being able to switch to those at will, like, is that for me might even reduce my need for, like, ambulation within Eve a little bit. Because if I really want to ambulate in something that's kind of like Eve, I'm just going to go play Legion because it's, you know, going to be on PC.
I was speaking of Valkyrie. I finally got to try it.
Fucking it's awesome, great. Isn't it? Yeah, it's literally the coolest thing I've ever done.
It's everything everybody's saying. I had a great time. It was a little hard for me because I wasn't familiar with Xbox controls and what the little, like, which was the Y button, which was the B button. So I did pretty bad in the match. It took me a couple deaths to figure out, you know, where the missile countermeasure button was. Once I did all right.
So, like,
where
the
was
biggest...
the missile countermeasure button? Because I never found it.
I think it's B. So... It's B or Y, and I just wasn't sure which one it was. So I was like, missile lock. Just pressed all of them, like, button mashed it. Didn't do too well. But once I got into that, and I got used to the looking around to target people thing, man, it was so awesome. I flew. You know the Amar station, like the Amar trade hub? It's got that gap in the fins up top. I flew my fighter. I turned it sideways. I flew through that. So awesome.
That was going to be my question.
I tilted my head up, and I could see the windows and the metal. And then I came up right behind somebody who didn't think to look for an opponent in the middle of the station, and I blew him up.
Yeah, my question was going to be, did you realize that left trigger, right trigger was roll?
Yeah, that part I had down pretty easily, but I didn't realize you could fly through the gap of the station until, like, the very end. But once I realized, I was like, I saw it, and I was like, huh. I wonder if my ship will fit through that. So I immediately stopped trying to kill the other players, and I just moved over to the station to see if I could go through it, or if there was, like, a wall that would stop me or whatever. And to my surprise, I could pass right through the station model. And to my pleasant surprise, a new guy that on the enemy team had just respawned and was flying right past me as I exited. I was like, oh, that's tremendous timing. I looked at him, did the lock command. Fired. Kept my eye on him, locked him again. He didn't even realize what was going on until I hit him with about 3 shots. That was brilliant.
Yeah, the moment for me was when you first put the headset on and your cockpit UI boots up, and then you look down and you see your legs and your hands sitting in the cockpit. Like, that was, it was awesome. I mean, the experience as a whole is just going to be so revolutionary for those kinds of games.
And shout out to Katie Sackhoff. She did a great job with the voice acting.
Oh, so you played that version. Okay, so you played a newer version than I did. Yeah, okay. Was it on Morpheus or Oculus?
I am not sure.
Oculus.
I didn't get
it. It was on Oculus. And the Oculus is, in my opinion, a so much better headset.
Anyway, guys, when it comes out, you're going to want one of these. Just a heads up. Moving on, I know we're getting quite long. In fact, we're probably going to save the dramatic reading for maybe the next ep. Because this is getting super long. But two more quick points. This shocked the hell out of me. A survey showed that 20% of new players have never trained a skill. Well, I would like to know what a new player is, because if that's more than 2 weeks of being in the game, I am aghast. And the reasoning is, apparently, they don't really know that it matters.
Which kind of... to me, sounds like people that aren't trying too hard. It's like,
it sounds to me that people never try to fit any other modules to their ship either. So who are these people? Like, they're perpetually in noob ships that never fit new modules?
People that need everything spoon-fed to them, I think, which probably is a decent 20% of the population, so really, statistically, not too far off.
I guess, but I can't imagine these players stick with the game. So,
well,
like, how long
don't.
Are they here for?
But, I mean, like, realistically, do you have the time or resources to invest enough into these people that they do stay in the game and still turn a profit? Like, how much NPE do you really need for a person that doesn't want to figure it out, I guess? Because there's going to be some people that are expecting something spoon-fed to them, and they don't get that, and then they're done.
And Al, you were there for this conversation. Can you give us any more insight into who these people are and like what their motivations are, what their profile is in the game, how long they're here for, that kind of stuff?
Names, addresses, phone numbers?
Not really, unfortunately. I mean, my reaction is similar to yours. Like, I assume it's people who just went, oh, I'll play this Eve thing, and then never found skill training.
But, like, I literally don't know how that's possible unless all you're doing is flying your Ibis with the base weapons.
And you never click your character sheet because your skill sheet is the first thing that comes up.
That's just strange.
I don't know.
And surely the first time you, like, loot something, one of the first things I did after I got loot was try to put the loot on my ship. And, like, it would be like, oh, you don't have the skill to use this cargo hold expander, whatever it is. Unless, I guess, whatever skill set the new characters get is just so robust. I know they start ahead with Isk. Apparently you get, like, 6 ships by the time you're done with the tutorial. Must be nice.
Yeah,
jackasses. Back in my day, all I got was a Velator, and I had to work it 5 miles in the driven snow. Had to mine asteroids by biting it with my teeth and ripping the rocks out.
Oh, I remember buying a Bantam, and as expensive as a friggin' Bantam was.
I remember at one point investing my entire savings of playing for about a week and a half into a Tristan that was barely fit.
I did the same to a Mammoth, and like I was one of the only people in my corp in 2004 that could fly a Mammoth, and it was like a thing.
This is why we're bitter vets, guys.
Yup.
I've been spoon-fed. I'm a summer child who's lived in a lap of luxury her entire life.
Well, and that's cool, though, because it honestly has given you probably like a much, much, much better chance at staying in the game long-term. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with the NPE as it is now, but if you really think you need to make it a priority to go after these 20% of people that didn't know to train a skill because they don't think that skills matter, like, you're not doing something fundamentally wrong. These people just aren't for you.
They may not be for any game.
World of Warcraft. It's pretty spoon-fed. I don't know.
I think maybe they're coming from games where they just assume skills train automatically.
Or as you progress, you just level up.
Yeah.
And you just unlock more things.
You level up into your egg.
Yeah, so like I said, the only possible thing is like they haven't run into whatever a new player is, they haven't run into a thing where they found a module or needed to do something where they didn't have the skill for it yet. Or maybe they did and they didn't understand how to get it. So, you know, I'm fine with like putting in a short skill that gives them a notification when it's done, that kind of thing was talked about in the minutes. That's fine. I was just pretty aghast that it happened at all. And I want to wrap things up because we're getting quite long in the tooth here. With one final comment, and hopefully the light is coming. Grayscale mentioned that comparing anything to incursions was unsound, as they were potentially paying out too much anyway, and that it wasn't a good benchmark.
Welcome to 3 years ago.
Yes. And then you fixed, quote-unquote, the incursions back to where there's still stupidly high payouts. Grayscale then also mentions that, oh, in principle, everyone would just run incursions if they wanted to make money. They do.
Yeah. I mean,
the only people that don't are the guys with the capital alts in, like, high-grade wormholes that do it. Otherwise, if you're out there and you're trying to make money as fast as possible, you run incursions. If you're in 00, you have an alt that runs incursions. It's just the way it's done if you're looking to make as much money as possible in the shortest amount of time without, like, getting a Tech 2 BPO or something. You just pick up a ship and you hop in the incursion fleet, and you're making sick amounts of money per hour. So, it is encouraging that they will eventually address that. And with that, we are done. We will tackle this dramatic reading, a recruitment chat, and I lose that term very loosely, in Cafe Noir you don't want to miss. That's going to be on the next episode, guys. That's it. Go to declarationsboard.com for the show poll. You know we're going to have one. Leave a comment. Put it in a donation. You can reach Noir via our public channel, cafenoir.com. Apply to join us on the forums at noirmerch.com. And before I close things out, I do want to mention, we're going to put this on the top of the next show, we could use some iTunes reviews, guys. So if you're an iTunes user and you like the show, find us in an iTunes store and please, please, please drop a review there. It would really help us get the word out about the show. It really helps with the ranking of the podcast and that kind of thing. So drop us a line, give us a star rating, put in a few words if you got some nice words to say. And that's it for us here at Declarations of War. Good hunting, listeners.
You're walking in the woods. There's no one around and your phone is dead. Out of the corner of your eye, you spot him.
Shia LaBeouf.
He's following you, about 30 feet back. He gets down on all fours and breaks into a sprint. He's gaining on you.
Shia LaBeouf.
You're looking for your car, but you're all turned around. He's almost upon you now, and you can see there's blood on his face. My God, there's blood everywhere!
Running for your life from Shia LaBeouf. He's brandishing a knife, it's Shia LaBeouf. Lurking in the shadows. Hollywood superstar Shia LaBeouf. Living in the woods, Shia LaBeouf. Killing for sport, Shia LaBeouf. Eating all the bodies. Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Now it's dark, and you seem to have lost him. But you're hopelessly lost yourself. Stranded with a murderer, you creep silently through the underbrush. Aha! In the distance, a small cottage with a light on. Hope! You move stealthily toward it, but your leg! Ah! It's caught in a bear trap!
Tying off your leg!
Quiet, quiet.
Lead me to the cottage!
Quiet, quiet.
Now you're on the doorstep. Sitting inside, Shia LaBeouf. Sharpening an axe, Shia LaBeouf. But he doesn't hear you enter, Shia LaBeouf. You're sneaking up behind him. Strangling superstar Shia LaBeouf. Fighting for your life with Shia LaBeouf. Wrestling a knife from Shia LaBeouf. Stab it in his kidney. Safe at last from Shia LaBeouf.
You limp into the dark woods, blood oozing from your stump leg. You've beaten Shia LaBeouf.
Wait, he isn't dead. Shy surprise, there's a gun to your head and death in his eyes. But you can do jujitsu. With body slam, superstar Shia LaBeouf. Legendary fight with Shia LaBeouf. Normal Tuesday night for Shia LaBeouf. You try to swing an axe at Shia LaBeouf, but blood is draining fast from your stump leg. He's dodging every swipe. He parries to the left, you counter to the right. You catch him in the neck, you're chopping off his head now.
His head topples to the floor, expressionless. You fall to your knees and catch your breath. You're finally safe from Shia LaBeouf.